concerning the entire African world, addressing how African people are participating in globalization, ways in which the rest of the world continues to exploit African resources, uncovering labor violations by corrupt politicians and Western government powers. Learn what's happening now in interviews with artists, activists, scholars, and a host of other experts each episode. Listen Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Africa Now is also available on iTunes Podcast, Google Play Music, as well as SoundCloud on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW, Washington.
Welcome to The Collision.
The Collision, where sports and politics smash, Thursdays at 10 a.m. and on iTunes and Google Play, WPFW, Washington, D.C.
Education, art, health, music, politics, and all things community.
Yes!
Join me, Ambrose Lane Jr., as we uncover the issues of D.C. communities east of the river on To the East, Mondays at 5 p.m. right here on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW 89.3 FM.
DC. This is July 1st, 2024, and this is Joni, and I'm joined by Chuck. Good morning, Chuck. We have a packed show in store for you today. We have two very important guests during the first half hour. We're going to be talking about DC advocacy at the City Council tomorrow for a permanent ceasefire in Gaza, and then we're going to be speaking to a young man talking about the Paca Town Hall. But the second half of the show, we're going to be celebrating the ancestor from WPFW's ancestor, Gaston Neal, poet, activist. So stay tuned. Today would have been or is his 90th birthday, Gaston Neal. And Chuck, I don't know if you're on, but we want to give a special shout out to Dory Ladner, whose birthday was Friday. Happy birthday, Dory. And she got a special tribute in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, with her daughter, Joyce. And we will be talking to Joyce next week, but we wanted to wish Dory a happy birthday. Let's jump right in, and hopefully people can hear me. And let's move to our first guest, who is Emily Siegel with the DC Ceasefire Coalition. Good morning, Emily.
Good morning. Good to be here.
I'm glad you can hear me. We're having a little technical problems here. But first of all, we're very excited about this important activity taking place tomorrow. But first, tell us about the D.C. Ceasefire Coalition.
Sure. So the D.C. for Ceasefire Now Coalition began a campaign starting at the end of October 2023, calling on the DC Council to do a few things to show their solidarity with the Palestinian people who have been dealing with an ongoing genocide for a very long time, but an uptick in that genocide since October. And so our demand for the city council was to remove the lights from the Wilson building that they had put up in the colors of the Israeli flag, to hold a briefing for the council that centered Palestinian residents in DC who have family in Gaza, and then to pass a resolution calling for a permanent ceasefire. And so far, the first two demands have been met, but the final demand, a resolution, still has not moved forward. And so we are really trying to work to get that done. We believe that we do have the majority of votes in the council to pass what is called a sense of the council resolution, which does not need unanimous vote. And we have five council members who are very supportive, and we're trying to work with them as a group to introduce a resolution before they go on recess for the summer on July 15th.
And of course, as we've talked about on this program, and as many people know, the chair of the city council, Phil Mendelson, has been definitely a major roadblock in passing this resolution. But we'll talk about that more in a minute. Let's just first tell people, Emily, for those people who want to participate in this day of this DC Advocacy Day tomorrow, July 2nd, how can they do so?
Yes. So we are gathering probably about 100 people to go to the council tomorrow, July 2nd, from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. And you can join by either just showing up in Freedom Plaza at 8 a.m. or by registering at bit.ly/ceasefire advocacy day. And we'll be splitting up by wards. We also have a few affinity groups that are coming, and everyone will be going inside to try and have meetings and chat with the council members. And fill the halls of the Wilson building.
And so you're asking people to come at 8, and how late can people come? I think you go till, planning to go till about 2?
We're going to go until 2 p.m. So if you get there after about 9 a.m., you can come into the building and come to room 104, and we'll be able to check you in there and get you set up with meeting up with a group from your ward.
And for people who don't live in D.C., is there a reason for other folks to come?
Yeah, other folks can come, and we'll have you join groups to support, just to be able to show the council, you know, how many community members really support this resolution moving forward.
Absolutely. So for people who might be moving a little slowly tomorrow, if they're able to get there by 1 or 1:30, is that still okay?
Yep, that's fine. They can come anytime between 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. and join up for at least part of the day.
Terrific. And when you say affinity groups, tell us what that means.
So we have a group of Jewish folks that are coming together from Jewish Voice for Peace, If Not Now, and the New Synagogue Project. And they're going to be going around together. We also have a group of students, high school or just graduated or college students that are coming as a group. And then we also should be having a group of Christian clergy from local churches as well. So those are some groups that will be people from various wards, but that are coming together based on sort of their identity and shared interest in this.
That's really great. And I guess there wasn't a specific Muslim affinity group.
No, we don't have that. But I mean, if there's a group that comes, we're welcome. We're happy to create one. But There'll also be folks from all of those backgrounds in the ward groups as well. So even if we don't have an affinity group that matches your identity, you are very welcome to join in the other groups as well.
Terrific. And let's spend for a minute or two I have been very well aware of Phil Mendelson's kind of blocking this resolution, from what I understand, and I imagine you don't want to share the city council people who are favorable, because they may be attacked in some way, I would imagine. But and of course there are other cities around the country who have not passed these ceasefire resolutions. I used to know how many have. I think it's over 40 or 50 cities around the country, including Chicago, who was one of the first, a very large city with a strong labor background. And I know one of your ceasefire members is going to be coming next week with a bunch of labor folks to lobby. But why would you, or what would you have to say about Phil Mendelson and his resistance to even putting this, if I'm understanding correctly, on the agenda for discussion?
Yeah, it's been really disappointing to see kind of the ways in which he is not even willing to move or even have continued conversations around this issue. Recently, just a member of the DC community, not even specifically from our coalition, emailed to request a meeting with him. And he, as he put it, respectfully declined and refused to even have another meeting about the ceasefire resolution. I don't quite understand why he is so resistant. The reasonings that he gives us, that it's not a local issue or it's inconsequential, really make no sense, because any working person in DC pays money from their tax dollars to go to funding what's happening in Gaza right now. So
absolutely. Do you remember, Emily, the dollar figure? I know you've said it before. How many?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a total of 15.6 million goes just from DC residents' federal tax dollars every year. And so collectively as a DC community, we're giving that amount towards the military aid of Israel. That's a large amount that certainly would help on the budget issues that I know the DC Council has been dealing with for the last few months.
$15.6 million of DC residents' tax money goes to slaughter in Gaza. So that's something that everyone should be thinking about. If you want to mention any other city council people that have been opposed, or
So the other two members that have voiced their opposition are Brianne Nadeau for Ward 1, mm-hmm, and Matt Fruman for Ward 2. And both of them have said, publicly, they're saying they don't think it's a local issue. They don't want to get involved. Privately to us, and I am happy to make this public, they have both said, unless the resolution calls for the decimation of Hamas, that the resolution, they're not going to be in favor of the resolution. Even though the language we've shown also calls for the release of all Israeli and Palestinian hostages, very much talking about general peace, they still will not, they still said they don't support that type of ceasefire.
And do you know, Emily, if any of them, are you able to find out if any of them are receiving money from AIPAC?
You know, we have not figured that out yet. I don't actually know. I haven't heard very much about AIPAC specifically funding, like local council.
I'm sorry, Emily. I'm trying to rush you on.
No, there
is a way. I suggest you get in touch with, I know Medea Benjamin and Code Pink have advised me and others when we were looking into Tacoma Park, and they were able to find out. But anything you want to say? Well, we only have a minute left. I would imagine that the city council people that you did not mention have been supportive. And again, we don't necessarily want to mention them because they're going to may get give them more trouble than they deserve. So one more time, tell us what is happening tomorrow and how people can get involved, when and where and how.
Okay, so tomorrow we have the DC Advocacy Day for the Ceasefire Now Coalition. It will be at the Wilson Building from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. And you can register ahead of time at bit.ly/ceasefire advocacy day, or you can just show up from about 8 to 9. We will be in Freedom Plaza. And then afterwards, you can find us in room 104 and get going for the day with us anytime between 8 and 2 p.m., 8 a.m. and 2 p.m.
Thank you very much, Emily. We are very thankful. I can speak for myself. I'm very thankful for you, and I'm proud of the work you were doing to end this genocide. And again, say the name of your organization.
I'm with the DC for Ceasefire Now Coalition. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Emily. Okay, now we're going to move right on to another issue, which in some ways is related. I am very happy to bring on the airwaves Evan with PACA, Pan-African Community Action Organization, and talking about a very important town hall coming up on July 13th. Good morning, Evan.
Good morning, Joni. Thank you so much for having me.
And I'm so happy you can be here. First of all, tell us something about yourself and tell us what is PACA, what's the mission of PACA, and who you are.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Evan. I'm originally from D.C., from Southeast D.C. in particular. I'm a member of PACA, that's Pan-African Community Action. We are a grassroots organization of working class Black people organizing for community-based power in the city. We do that through participatory programs and political education, and we primarily focus on, or we primarily concentrate our organizing efforts in Ward 7 and 8 of the city, which is, as you know, where the working class Black population is primarily concentrated. And in particular, we are explicitly anti-capitalist and stand against all forms of race, class, gender, and sexual orientation-based oppression. So that's a broad overview of what we're about and what we do.
It's very encouraging to hear you. tell us the name of the town hall and when it's happening. And, of course, we'll repeat it again. But it's Saturday, July 15th, and you can share the rest.
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually Saturday, July 13th from 11 to 4 p.m. The title is The Harm of Crime Bills and the Future of Community Power in Chocolate City. The event will be held at Rise Demonstration Center, 2730 MLK Avenue Southeast. It'll be in person, and you can find more information on the Eventbrite. The Eventbrite URL is pacacrimebilltownhall.eventbrite.com. That's PACA, P-A-C-A, crimebilltownhall.eventbrite.com.
And of course, you can, will be listening, if you listen to PFW, you'll be hearing more about it. But it's a great title alone, The Harm of Crime Bills and the Future of Community Power in Chocolate City. Tell us a little bit about what is meant by some of the statements I know PACA has made about the town hall. Why do you say, for example, that, why does PACA say, and you agree, that the crime bill is a war against Black working class, and why is that? And a war against particularly Black youth.
Yeah, absolutely, right. And we would say that this is just the latest iteration of that war, but in particular, right, and we'll talk about the specific provisions, but overarching or overall, this bill completely ignores the root issues of street level crime that it's supposed to be targeting, those root issues being poverty, addiction, food insecurity, inadequate housing, and capitalist exploitation more broadly, right? These are all contradictions that are embedded in our society. But instead of dealing with any of these root issues, as we move into the specific provisions of the bill, we see how it in particular criminalizes working class people, low income people, and particularly a Black youth. So when we're talking about those provisions, what I'm speaking about in particular would be things like the criminalization of fare evasion on the metro. This bill would give police more power to detain and arrest people for fare evasion, and in fact, force them to give up their name and address if stopped for fare evasion. There's also an anti-mask provision, which beyond the obviousness of completely ignoring the ongoing dangers of COVID-19 in our community, allows for police to target individuals that are wearing masks, up to their discretion, of course, right? And a secondary offense can be added if someone is seen to be wearing a mask in the commission of a crime, or what the police say would be the commission of a crime. And then one final provision that I want to call out is this imposition, or the ability to impose, what are called drug-free zones that can be defined for up to 5 days in a particular area or a city block. And this is incredibly ambiguous and arbitrary in its design and what would be the implementation, and would very clearly target and further criminalize Black youth in the city arbitrarily.
Absolutely. And I'm very proud and encouraged to hear you, Evan. I'll just share that WPFW, other programmers, we've been talking about this crime bill, I think, for much of this year. And I know I've had numerous shows with Harriet's Wildest Dreams and other folks, and Roach Brown, who can be heard Tuesdays at 10, has also discussed it as well. So it's really encouraging to hear and know that young people from PACA, including many young people from Ward 7 and 8, are standing up. I don't know if you went to any of the sessions when this bill was being fought at the city council chambers, and the building was packed. I don't remember if that was February or March, but there's been a lot of opposition before the bill was passed. So it's important that you're doing this after the bill is passed. Tell us a little bit about what can people, this is a live event in Southeast on Martin Luther King Avenue. I usually hear it called the Rise Center. It has many activities there often, but what can people expect if they come out Saturday, July 13th, between 11 a.m. and 4?
Yeah, so thank you for that. So we have three main goals that we're really looking to accomplish with this town hall. The first and foremost is to raise consciousness around the crime bill and the provisions within it and our analysis of it, right? As you said, you've been talking about the crime bill for quite a while. You've been following it. We've been also involved in that process before, during, and now after. But we really want to highlight our radical analysis of that bill, right? Because PACA understands Black communities within Black communities to be domestic colonies within this country, right? So we understand that Black communities in this country have no control over their economic, legal, social, or any other educational institutions that control our lives. So based on that analysis, PACA is working to foment and produce community-based power to directly fight against, right, this imposition of these colonial doctrines that affect our lives, right? And this crime bill is one of them, right? So first and foremost, we want to raise the consciousness around that. Secondly, we want to demonstrate the power and validity of community-based decision-making and participatory democracy. As you know, the community input was completely ignored in this process, right? Working class Black communities had no input in this, and their input was completely or their perspectives were completely ignored and not acknowledged, right? But we want to bring people together to help them understand that we understand the wisdom and the creativity of the community can come up with real solutions to these problems that actually address them, that actually address issues of intercommunal violence, and that do not target or criminalize people in our community. And then finally, we want to help grow local organizations, right? Local organizations that have radical analysis like our own, right? Like the local DC chapter of BAP, Black Alliance for Peace, like Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, or MXGM DC. These groups, these organizations will be in attendance and will be a part of this process. And we hope that as a byproduct of this, we can continue to build membership and focus and awareness of these local organizations and the important work that they're doing in the city.
Absolutely. And I must say, it gives me great joy to hear you use and understand the words working class, because we do not speak enough about class. And you know, some of us believe that's deliberate. We do talk about race, which, of course, needs to be talked about. But we also need to always understand the role of class in keeping us down and divided. I understand there's also going to be some music on July 13th.
Yes, indeed. We appreciate the importance of the cultural aspects of, you know, bringing people together. So we will have, well, first off, we'll be feeding people. So there will be food. There will also be, as you said, a live performance by the Afro Go-Go Roots Collective, Crank Lukongo Unplugged. As you know, again, Go-Go is a very important cultural, artistic formation within the city. So, you know, we could not have that not be represented, or we couldn't have that not be represented. And finally, we want to note that there will also be on-site childcare provided. We understand that, again, right, we are planning this town hall from a people-centered perspective, right? So it's not just food, not just cultural performances, but also making sure that people have the support they need, like childcare, to engage in this type of activity. And finally, it is a free event. It's open to the public. We will be accepting donations as people come in, but we want to understand that this is a free event. It's in person. We encourage everyone to come.
Yes, absolutely. And as we talked about in the first segment, when we were talking about the ceasefire resolution, we heard that there was particular city council people that were opposing ceasefire, and there's some who were in favor of it. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's a similar people on this issue with the crime bill. If I'm not mistaken, I think it was Trayon White, perhaps, was the only city council person who voted against it. But I don't know if you have that information, but it certainly wasn't a loud enough, you know, kicking back against.
Yeah, yes, certainly wasn't a loud. Absolutely
right.
Not, right? And the individual that you just mentioned, also, while they may have voted against the bill, they explicitly called for the National Guard to come in and talked about the crisis of crime in the city, right? So we see that even when, you know, even in the situation where someone might be opposed to this, the particular instance of this crime, but again, we have a larger analysis around as I said, around Black communities being a domestic colony, and the call for something like the National Guard to come in and reimpose law and order is directly opposed to that. And just to be clear, Trayon Wright, he abstained, but he did not vote against, right? So yeah. It's really important to note, right? And we can see that with the ceasefire bills as well, right? Sorry, Joni.
Let me just also mention that, as you well know, I'm sure, Evan, that unfortunately, D.C. is not the only one who is passing these crime bills. There was a discussion on WPFW on what's at stake on Wednesday morning about how a very almost identical crime bill was being passed in Maryland. I understand there's one in Philadelphia. So it's very encouraging that PACA is taking this up, because this is an issue that is not going away. And this is real stuff, folks. We got to really support the young people and PACA standing up on this issue. Tell us again, Evan, and I hate to leave you. I'm glad to meet you, though. But tell us again what is happening and how people can attend.
Yes, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you again for having me. I just want to reiterate the fact that, yes, this is not just a local issue. Not only are these crime bills popping up all over the country, but this is part and parcel of the move for cop cities across the country. Of course, in Atlanta, there's a move for cop city in Baltimore, right? This is happening all over the city, and this is part of the larger continued militarization of the police forces in this country and security forces in this country. So,
if I can just say, Evan, also, we need to understand the word fascism.
Yes.
Because fascism is real. We need to understand how some of these issues are encouraging the enlargement and of the coming of fascism. So this is this is important work that you're doing. I'm sorry. Tell us one more time what's happening July 13th and where people can go.
Yes, Saturday, July 13th, PACA will be having our town hall, The Harm of Crime Bills and the Future of Community Power in Chocolate City. It will run from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. It will be at the RISE Demonstration Center at 2730 MLK Avenue Southeast. And you can find more information on the Eventbrite at pacacrimebilltownhall.eventbrite.com. That's PACA, P-A-C-A, crimebilltownhall.eventbrite.com.
And again, that is The Harm of Crime Bills and the Future of Community Power in Chocolate City. And that is Saturday, July 13th. Evan, it's great to meet you. Hope to meet you in person someday. And thank you for being with us. We have to move right along. Unfortunately, we're moving quickly here today. We're going to be spending the rest of the half hour of the hour here honoring a very important ancestor of part of WPFW family, Gaston Neal, poet, activist, very active in the beginning of WPFW's history. Today would have been his 90th birthday. He left us a while ago, but we want to lift him up. Last year we did an hour program. We're going to be hearing some of that. Unfortunately, we can't play the whole thing today. But you'll be hearing from several poets. This is a replay. And I want to just say I wish we could have more tributes to some of our WPFW ancestors. For example, Gaston's buddy, Nap, Don't Forget the Blues Turner. And we'll probably hear about Nap and Gaston in this replay. But Nap left us 20 years ago. We need to be celebrating Nap Turner and other folks. Again, this is a replay of something that Kenny Carroll and several others did together with me last year. We're going to go for as long as we can, so we won't be saying goodbye. We won't have an outro. This is our goodbye now. Happy the 4th of July, or they lie, and we welcome our tribute to Gaston Neal.
Beyond the thunder and lightning, past the clouds, over the dark night, she reached up to the sky of stars and caught the red hot light of the North Star. With blood so deep, she challenged the whip, the gun, the knife. She challenged the fire pulled from the bodies of slaves, made into laws, prisons, and courts.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to our special 11 a.m. WPFW tribute to our hometown hero, as he's being called today, Gaston Neal. This is part of our day-long Memorial Day special, tribute to heroes. Later on in the day, we're going to be hearing about Tina Turner. But right now, we're spending the hour with three wonderful poets talking about Gaston Neal. I'm just going to read a little something from a little book of the poetry of Gaston Neal, a sampler. During the turbulent 1960s, most major cities had a singularly influential Black Power protest writer. Chicago had Don E. Lee, later became Haki Mayabuti. Newark had Leroy Jones, who became Amiri Baraka. And Detroit had Dudley Randall. Washington had Gaston Neal. We're going to be spending the hour with Gaston Neal. I am very honored to have three wonderful poets who, who knew Gaston Neal very well. Kenny Carroll. Kenny Carroll, for many years, was a host on this radio station with 2K Nation. Mm-hmm. And he'll be introducing us to Gaston as well. And then we have Brian Gilmore. And I'm going to ask each one of you to introduce yourselves or have Kenny introduce you. And last but not least, we have Peter Harris. And I must say, it is because of Gaston Neal that I've been on the radio for 31 years. When I first came here from Pittsburgh, which was Gaston's hometown, he introduced me to WPFW. So with that said, Kenny Carroll.
All right. Thank you, Joni, for having us. And I love that PFW does these memorial celebrations because we forget that part of Memorial Day is to celebrate the not just the kind of the typical imperialist celebration of Memorial Day, but the celebration of all people who fight against oppression in the world. And certainly Gaston Neal was one of those people. And so just a little bit about Gaston off the top of my head. He's a Pittsburgh native. Gaston was a part of several significant radical movements, both social and civil rights movements and literary arts movements. And specifically, we can talk about his work and his significance in the Black arts movement, which, you know, runs from the death of Malcolm X into the 70s. And we can talk about his participation in radical Black organizations, his work with people like Stokely Carmichael, his work around the country and working in communities to help communities fight off oppression. And I celebrate Gaston for also the additional work he did in the city around the health and welfare of people in the city, especially the most marginalized people. And I celebrate Gaston through the words of people like August Wilson, who talked about Gaston's oversized influence on him as a writer and an artist when he was coming up in Pittsburgh. August, when I first met him at the Pittsburgh, at AWP in Pittsburgh, he talked about following Gaston and Rob Penny around and wanting to be a poet like them and writing really bad, you know, mimicry of European poets. But he said it was very important that there was a space that people like Gaston made, a space for young artists. And then I talk about Amiri Baraka, one of my mentors, who really, and it's interesting, this is how I met Amiri Baraka and Gaston Neal, and I always used to tell him this story. We were at a jazz club, Woody's Hilltop on Georgia Avenue. Baraka was performing with Nina Simone. Nina Simone didn't show up, but I'm sitting at the bar, and I'm just sitting there ear hustling, listening to Baraka's conversation, and Gaston says, "Hey, man, do you know Amiri?" And I didn't even know Gaston, you know, and he introduced me to Amiri, and we became lifelong friends. And I was telling, you know, Peter before we came in, Gaston also was one of the first instructors for the D.C. Writers Corps when we started. He came in and worked with the writers who were going to go out to the communities and work in the communities and produce art. One of the things that Gaston left us with was this saying. Gaston used to say, we miss 99% of all poetry in the world because we think it's supposed to be in a specific form. And so he admonished the writers to, you know, find the poetry that comes naturally from the people before you think that it belongs into some encapsulated form. So that's Gaston Neal in a nutshell for me. And we'll swing it to...
Let me just say something. So I'm going to ask Brian to go next. And
okay.
Gaston has some very important achievements and things we remember him by. And one is the New School of Afro-American Thought. I'm going to ask Brian to talk about that. But let me just say a little bit more about Pittsburgh, where Gaston grew up. He grew up in the Hill District, which some people may know is the home of many and very important jazz folks. Gaston grew up in poverty. His dad passed when he was just 10 years old. He moved to D.C. in the 50s and, of course, stayed there until his transition in the late, I think it was 99. I'm just going to read a quote from James Early, who is another another member of the PFW family. Full of history, music, struggle, love, and achievement, Gaston Neal is a memory voice heard in the present, speaking the future. So that's absolutely true. He's heard in the present and he's speaking the future. So with that, let's welcome on Brian Gilmore. And Brian, tell us a little bit about yourself as a poet before you jump into sharing with us about Gaston.
Okay, thank you very much. And Brian Gilmore, native Washingtonian, Northeast crew, and been a poet for about 30 years, I guess, in this town with the public school. And then I went to the great Archbishop Carroll High School, graduated of the UDC Law School as well, very proud of that. So... But my life has been in this city, love this city, and even though it's the colony, I still love it.
And Brian was also part of our Sonia Sanchez tribute last fall. So,
and thank you with that, too. So I met Gaston probably a little bit after I became a poet. Just arbitrarily met him through Kenneth Carroll and became a mentor to me, a great friend, and... appreciated the work he was doing, very committed individual. So before I talk about the New School, let me read a little bit about what Gaston said about himself from a book called The Black Power Revolt from 1967. He has a poem in there, but his bio, he wrote himself, he says, dead born 1934, reborn 61 with the knowledge of the beauty of my blackness, the unfailing destiny of my people and me. Born and raised in Pittsburgh, Penn, Black Hill District, my philosophy after I destroyed the whiteness or most of it, for I believe somewhere in me there is still some hiding. However, I will not rest until I'm purged and linked completely with my brothers in the struggle to destroy and rebuild a black nation. Right now, my philosophy is simple. Discipline for unity, unity for a nation, discipline for unity. He also says, right now, this is in 67, right now my life is involved in the New School of Afro-American Thought. I am the cultural director and I'm editing a volume of poetry of my time spent in St. Elizabeth Hospital. So to give a few notes about Gaston and the New School of Afro-American Thought, before that, Gaston was a poet before that, probably back until the 50s, because he is at the famous reading at Howard University of the Beat Poets, right, who came down, Mary Baraka, A.B. Spellman, mm-hmm, and Gaston came down from New York City, and Greg Corso was there, Allen Ginsberg was Ray Bessemer was there, mm-hmm, and they read at Howard University. It was kind of like a really big deal, especially, mm-hmm, on the campus of Howard University, right, and then and then, of course, Baraka writes his famous poem called One Night Stand, mm-hmm. which is pretty hilarious if you read it, because he's trashing Howard
right.
with his metaphors and mm-hmm. codes. So Gasson was reading poetry by the 60s, because Julius Hobson organized a reading in 1964, a really big deal, mm-hmm. and Gasson was on that.
Right.
And that was 1964. That was called Four Acts for Act at WST. I know us old school DC heads know WST. You couldn't even miss it when you were traveling uptown.
Right, right.
So, but him and Don Freeman did form the New School of Afro-American Thought in 65, and then they started programming in 66, 67. They did a famous launch in October 1966 at their storefront down there. This was in the 14th Street corridor, mm-hmm. probably right near where all the action is, right near the Reeves Center, right near all of that now.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mary Baraka read at that reading, Larry Neal, Sterling Brown, Owen Dodson, mm-hmm. A.B. Spellman, mm-hmm. all read at that reading. It was called 3 Days of Soul.
Mm-hmm.
Gasson was and Don Freeman were able to bring in 20 music acts over 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Really big deal to launch the new school. But the new school was a school where people took classes and mm-hmm. came down and took classes.
Right.
And they would regularly take classes. I mean, Gasson's whole philosophy was you kind of like had to reprogram yourself, remake mm-hmm. yourself. So instead of me talking about all the programming they did, they also did a tribute to Langston Hughes when Langston Hughes died in 1967.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of me talking about all those details, there is a film on YouTube called Under the Radar, Under the Radar. And if you just do the search on YouTube, you will see the film about the new school. It's about 45 minutes. Don Freeman is talking on there, and some of the students who were in that are talking on about how the new school operated and everything like that. I know the new school lasted at least until like the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And then Gasson famously returns to the city from his travels.
Right, right.
And says, you know, the school is no more. And mm-hmm. there were too many cooks in the kitchen. I remember that famous quote.
Right.
He said there were too many chefs in the kitchen or something right. like that.
And I think the SNCC Legacy Project perhaps has captured some of that of Gasson.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And also Drum and Spear Bookstore and New School were intimately connected at the same time. But I would recommend watching that film. I've watched it because I'm doing all this research for this book I'm writing. I've watched it like 3 or 4 times. But the students, it'd be great for people to hear from the students, because then they can hear more about the program and that Gasson and Don Freeman were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're listening to a special tribute to our hometown hero, Gasson Neal, with three poets, Kenny Carroll, three native Washingtonian poets, Kenny Carroll, Brian Gilmore, and Peter Harris, and this is Joni. And as you're talking, Brian, I'm remembering all these stories. I'll just tell one quick one. Gasson was, of course, very much a part of the WPFW family, very close to Tom Porter. That's how I met Tom Porter, was through Gasson Neal. But one of the great stories is that none other than Gasson Neal, Nap, Don't Forget the Blues, Turner, and Roach Brown. You know this story, Kenny?
No, no.
They were at Roach Brown. You can hear him tomorrow at 10 a.m.
Yes, indeed.
The three of them were where? Guess what? At St. E's. And guess what they did? They were supposed to, instead of being locked up in the D.C. jail, they were sent to St. E's. And it is there that all three of them learned theater. And they all three, Gaston, Roach Brown, and Nap Turner, are thankful for that time that they had together in St. Mm-hmm. E's to craft their art of poetry.
Mm.
And that's just one story.
Right.
and I'm remembering a lot of stories. One about Marion Barry and Nina Simone.
So they were all three were admitted?
Yes, they were all three together in St. E's for quite a while. It was probably at least a year. I'll ask Roach. But Roach still talks about it. And Knapp talked about it fondly, and you know, Nap Turner was a wonderful, in addition to being a lot of things, but he was also an actor and a poet.
And he starred in the August Wilson piece here at the Woolly Mammoth Theater
Nap Turner played in
the piano.
No. The other blues joint that they just made into a movie.
Okay, and
Joe Turner is coming on.
Bessie Smith. Not Bessie.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
The other one.
Yeah.
Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
Right.
Yeah. And Nap Turner on the bass.
That's Chadwick's last performance.
Right. Yeah. As far as the movie, you're right. Mm-hmm.
And I know that there are some listeners out there who do not know August Wilson. So check him out. a very, very important, probably the most important playwright, if you could say, of the last century. He's a play coming out in a couple weeks right here in the area. Mm-hmm. But again, August Wilson thanked Gaston Neal for inspiring him to be a poet. Mm-hmm. So I guess we can jump in with a couple of poems. Well, let me just, I'm sorry, I have going to make this quick because you mentioned Nina Simone and Brian. I know you have a poem about Marion Barry. Marion Barry and Gaston Neal had a very close and positive relationship. It was because of Marion Barry's support that Gaston Neal was able to get a job at the D.C. Health Department during mm-hmm. the height of the HIV epidemic, which mm-hmm. I'll talk about in a moment. But I remember this was back in the 80s, and Nina Simone was having some challenges, mental health challenges. She left Mary Baraka's in Newark and was, Gaston saw her wandering. I'm sorry to tell this story because I know we still love Nina Simone, but she was wandering the street and having some challenges. Gaston went to Marion Barry, and Marion Barry made sure that Nina Simone had a safe, comfortable place to be as mm-hmm. she was dealing with her mental health challenges. Mm-hmm. So many, many stories about Gaston Neal. Mm-hmm. Who wants to jump in? Do we want to jump in with a poem?
Peter Harris.
Brian, what?
Yeah.
Okay, Peter, let's get Peter. Peter Harris, again, a native Washingtonian. I had the blessing to hear him together with Brian do a very special poetry reading a week ago Sunday, and listeners, you're going to have the treat of hearing them again. So, Peter, welcome. Tell us a little bit about you, who you are.
Well, I'm just trying to write a good sentence, especially when I sit with these two geniuses. But you know, I didn't know Mr. Neal, but I do know that the era. And I know that the guiding mm-hmm. ethics and principles, whether you were in the university setting or the community setting, was service and connecting. Right. Mm-hmm. And also seeing the whole picture so that at one moment you are doing electoral stuff. Mm-hmm. Next moment you over in the hood trying to make sure you break mm-hmm. circuits in people's lives. Mm-hmm. So I think that for me as a person now nearing 70 and who has absorbed what I consider the core principles of so much of that social work and social justice work, and even what I call social justice tenderness, is people were saying to each other, we love you, we need you. Right. We need you to stand mm-hmm. for something bigger than the worst case scenarios that are bedeviling you. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if you're talking about three folks who are meeting in a mental institution, mm-hmm. but yet saying, well, wait a minute, we'll get our meds, we'll get off all together, but we're going to really think big about being cultural workers. That's the tradition out of which I come. I'm the director of something called the Black Man of Happiness Project. And I'm super, super interested in how can joy and happiness get very specific and be very specifically used by black men of witness and liberation mm-hmm. so that they can contribute mm-hmm. to their families' lives, their own lives, mm-hmm. The lives of our community. And as Gwendolyn Brooks used to write, first fight, then fiddle. Mm. And basically, I've come to the conclusion at this age that you fiddle while you fight. Mm-hmm. Because it's really all the stuff we're talking about in my way of interpreting it these days is, you know, we're making beauty as we go along.
Right.
My mother used to say, pick up that paper, that trash over in Parklands. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I didn't throw it down on the ground, yeah. Mom. And she said, well, you live here, don't
right,
you?
Right, right.
You live here, don't you?
Right.
And that is the ethic that's driving so much of my cultural work. Mm. The poetry is my freedom, venue. That's where I go to sing my song without censorship. Mm-hmm. That's where I go to be my most imaginative self. Mm-hmm. So, you know what I mean? You can look up my work, blackmanofhappiness.com. And I'm here in D.C. this particular visit as a residency artist at the Nicholson Project, which is over on Nicholson Street in Southeast. Mm-hmm. And for another month, I'll be here thinking and writing and resting and researching, doing stuff like this. And then as part of that residency on June 11th, Kenny and Brian, Kenny's a really genius son, Kenny Carroll III,
yeah.
and my friend and teacher out of Baltimore, Melvin E. Brown, we're going to come back to the American Poetry Museum June 11th, 3 p.m., and we're going to do a group choral reading of three poems. Maybe we'll throw a lanyap in there at the end, but we're going to honor Sterling A. Brown.
Yes.
And the project is called See You Comes by Tens. Mm. And, you know, we don't even have to go much further than that, but we welcome folks to come on out. We don't quite know every bit of the arrangement for our chorus, but we're going to sing. And we're going to celebrate Mr. Brown and gathering up dudes. Come on by 10. Mr. Brown said that they got all the judges. They don't come by ones. They don't come by twos. They come by tens. And so one of the poems we'll be doing is, you know, we can gather each other. We can gather each other by tens
right.
for work. And that's what it seems to me Mr. Neal stood for, is let's gather each other, you know, by tens, by twenties, because we do need the work that we need to do.
Right.
And we need to do the work that we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And June 11th, tell us, Peter, what day of the week is that?
It's a Sunday.
It's a Sunday. And what time again?
3 p.m.
And explain to people where the Poetry Museum is. Because
That's a good question.
Yeah. So
I'll let you all do that.
Yeah, so the American Poetry Museum is right at the Brooklyn Arts Walk, which is about 1 second from the Brooklyn Metro Station on the Red Line.
Oh, thank you.
Just
bro.
Get off there, right off of Monroe Street. I think, directly off of Monroe Street, or you can come right up through the Brooklyn Metro Station.
Absolutely. We'll repeat it again. I was very thankful to have gone there with Jewel the other Sunday. A wonderful place, and not too far from Busboys and Poets. Again, that is Sunday, June 11th, from what time?
3 to 6, and by the way, there's an exhibition up called See You Comes by Tens.
Mm-hmm.
We have a most marvelous photo of Stokely Carmichael sitting with an elder in Alabama in 1965 that we found in the Library of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And that exhibition features that juxtaposed with the Declaration of Independence.
Mm-hmm.
And on the opposite wall, we have a gorgeous portrait by Roy Lewis from right here in D.C.
Good friend of Gaston. Good,
that's beautiful. And we also have a beautiful portrait by Chester Higgins Jr., the master from up in Brooklyn.
Yes,
it's very, very inspiring to go there, and you will see the spirit.
The current program is an encore presentation.
Go there Sunday, June 11th. And I keep wanting to tell more stories, but who wants to jump in? We want to hear some of your poetry before we keep. Not just only talking.
Okay. Why don't we have Peter read something since he sort of set us up for some stuff.
Guess,
that'd be beautiful. Yes, indeed.
First thing out my mouth, you know, it don't even have to be words. Rapture scatting, praise faces beaming, good in you, bending light in the room. Illuminate, do right, coursing in the bloodstream of people you meet or children you raise. Enunciate the first thing, like you a duet partner with Sarah Vaughan. Send in the clowns for real. Laughter scatters red joy, Baggy improvisation brightens eyes. Music faces merry-go-round. Like, what if the first thing sound like Muhammad Ali floating boasts on a summer cloud? Or what if the first thing sound like sweet honey blending out front of a militant hum? Or Malcolm pinpointing on a cushion of New Day Errol Garner? Or what if the first thing sound like Mother Wit guiding by the light of Ida B. Wells? Or you, yourself, being to the core of daylight in your bed.